Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening. It's great to have you with us today. Let me ask you a question. Do you have a presentation coming up, and are you nervous about that presentation? I know, you know, they say that public speaking is the hardest thing for most people to get excited about doing, but our next speaker, our next guest is going to change all of that. Andy Sachs is joining us from Spark Presentations in Boston, Massachusetts, and Andy's going to talk to us about the reasons you get anxious when you even think about public speaking, and practical ways to conquer your symptoms so that you can wow your crowd. So, Andy, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Bill. It's my pleasure to be here.
It's my pleasure to have you on the show, Andy. I know this is a common situation for a lot of people. They say that I just don't like getting up in front of people, although I have to make presentations. So tell us a little bit about you and your background and Spark Presentations.
Well, I'm one of those rare and lucky folks that actually loves giving presentations and loves being in front of a crowd. I've been a professional full-time speaker and trainer for about 17 years with Spark Presentations. I have a background, as you might expect, as a theater geek, doing plays and musicals growing up. And I actually grew up in a town outside of Boston called Lexington, which is where the American Revolutionary War started in April of 1775. And one of my first jobs as a teenager during the summer is I would work on the town green where the battle took place as a tour guide. I would walk tourists around the green, and I would show them all the monuments and tell them the story of the Battle of Lexington. I would wear one of those old tri-cornered hats, and then at the end, I would take off the hat and turn it upside down and pass it around and beg for tips. And it's amazing what you can learn about the art of presenting when you're 15 years old and working for tips and thinking about sharing historical information and how do you shape it so it's fun, it's engaging, it's memorable. And that was sort of my first task in professional presenting.
Well, that's great. That's, you know, good for you for taking that initiative. And it sounds like you had that spark. So it's a good name for your company, Spark Presentations. What types of businesses or individuals do you typically work with? Who's your average customer, and what do you help them do?
Well, of course, we're thrilled to work with any size client, and we work with Fortune 500 companies like AT&T and other large ones, all the way to startups. So we're happy to provide services wherever we can. We found that the places where we can make the most impact is usually a small size company, maybe a startup that's only a year or two old. And it's a company that has a lot of motion, a lot of energy to it. They've hired a few dozen staff. They have an exciting product or service that they really want to get out in the market. They've got an operating budget in place, and they've assembled their team, and they're ready to make a splash, and they're just not quite sure how to do it. So they bring me in, and we get to talk about how to make a presentation and how to apply it in all these different vehicles. So we come up with the basic messaging. Sometimes I'll take what they have and help them reshape it. Sometimes I'll help them brainstorm the messaging in the first place. And then we'll say, great, how can we put that message into a trade show presentation? How can we put it into a video that will go on your website and on YouTube? How do we take that message and reshape it into a seminar that some of your C-level executives might give in an upcoming conference? So we get to take that basic message and help them design it and alter it so that it works in all these vehicles, but the core message is always the same.
Okay, so the core message is the same, but the presentation and the delivery should vary based on your audience. Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, and the idea is that I like to catch companies when they're at this stage, when they know what they have, but they haven't quite decided what the best format is or the best terminology, the best language, the best phrasing is for sharing it with a wider audience. They know what it is, they know why they like it, they know why it's cool. And then I come along and I sort of offer them their audience's perspective. And I say, okay, I know that you're in love with your product or service, and that's exactly as it should be. But as a potential customer of yours and playing that role in the moment, I need to know what's in it for me. What solid, applicable, immediate value and benefit does this hold for me? How does this help me reach my goal that I already had when I approached you? And I get them thinking not only about the inherent features and benefits of the product, but also how to rephrase those things so that they resonate with a given audience in a given venue. So in a trade show presentation for a particular vertical market, let's say I have I'm going to be doing booth presentations coming up for a healthcare show in Chicago. So then we talk about the healthcare market. You know, what benefits are important to people who work in the healthcare industry based on their role in that industry? If you were going to make a product video talking about that exact same product and then putting it on YouTube, you might talk more generally about benefits that apply to a whole bunch of industries. If you were going to give a seminar at an industry conference where people are already familiar with the terminology, you might get to start with and go through the explanation phase of the conversation a little faster and talk about how it may change the industry in the years to come. So these are all sort of different flavors of the same topic, and each one is getting out many of the same basic points, but they're all tailored to their specific avenues.
And it's so important these days because the marketplace is so crowded with messages that you really have to take great care to stand out and really get to that hot point, that hot button of the consumer, which may not be, for instance, I saw a presentation recently where they said the Got Milk campaign was genius because they were getting away from the theme of milk makes you healthy. The question is, do you have milk for the consumers? That was the hot
button. That's right. And that was really a brilliant move. They turned it into an issue of scarcity. It's not whether you want it, it's do you have enough of it? And that's a great example of how you might take a topic and just tweak it so that it resonates with that particular audience.
So it's been said these days that, you know, if you're not writing and speaking, you're not marketing these days as effectively as you can. So let's talk about public speaking. Now, where does this fear of public speaking come from? And how does it rank among common American fears?
Well, it's really a curiosity, and it's something that fascinated me as somebody who works in the speaking field, that speaking is generally, if you look on just an average top 10 list of American fears, public speaking is generally ranked number one. And just to give you a taste of the other nine on the list, heights, insects and bugs, money problems, deep water, sickness, death itself, flying, loneliness, dogs. So the other nine items on the list are things that can directly or indirectly kill you. And the one thing that Americans fear more than all of those is standing up and talking to a group. And
wow.
I'm just fascinated by that.
Well, so and why is it? Why do you think that is?
Well, I really think this is a fascinating topic because everybody at some point in their lives is called on to stand up and talk in front of a group in some forum. You have to stand up and advocate for a cause, whether it's teaching a class or giving a wedding toast or running a staff meeting. And so why is it that people's stomachs get tied in knots when they even think about doing that? And it turns out that there's some physiology behind it that goes back to our caveman days that influences how we react. And I'll tell you a quick semi-fictitious story to illustrate the point. Imagine that you're a caveman living in caveman days, and you're out one day by yourself hunting and gathering and foraging for food, as you do, and you're out in a clearing, and you turn suddenly, and you realize that 50 yards away from you in the clearing facing you is a bear. So I'm sure, Bill, you'd agree that in this situation, there's a threat occurring, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So when I give this seminar, what I say is there are three conditions that exist in this moment. First, you're isolated from your group. The rest of your tribe is a few miles away. You're out there by yourself. The second salient detail is that you're the object of focus in that moment. The bear is staring at you. If you saw a bear way off in the distance, who wasn't paying any attention to you, you might not be as nervous, but you know that the bear is staring at you and you're the object of focus. And the third ingredient in this scenario is that there's a fear of harm. You know that if you don't play your cards right in this moment, that you could lose your life or you could be seriously injured. So there's a real immediate threat of physical danger, harm, or death. So what we found is that when your brain observes those three conditions, that you're isolated from your group, you're the object of focus, and there's a fear of harm, it automatically initiates a whole series of chemical changes in your body that happen in a fraction of a second that are designed to get you ready to do one of two things. Either you're going to have to run away from the threat, or you're going to have to fight your way out of the situation. And I'm sure you recognize this as something you learned in high school biology. This is your fight or flight response.
This is your basic brain behavior, right? This is what your
brain does. Right. This is what your brain does. The animal part of your brain says, uh-oh, I'm in what I perceive as a life-threatening situation. I'm going to initiate all these physiological changes in the body in order to give myself the best chance of survival. So going back to that scenario, imagine that Caveman Dave's body arms him to run away. He's able to run away and escape. He goes back to his tribe. He procreates. He passes on the fight-or-flight response to his kids. They're more likely to survive because they have it. They pass it on. Eons go by all the way up to modern life. Now imagine that you're standing on a stage in front of, let's say, 500 people at an industry conference giving a seminar. And think about the three conditions that exist in that moment. First, you're isolated from the group. The rest of the audience is sitting down on the floor. You're standing up on the stage away from them. Second, you're the object of focus. Everybody is staring at you. And third, there's a fear of harm. You may not worry that you're literally going to die if you don't do a good job, but I'm sure you'd agree that there are some possible harms that almost feel worse than death in that situation. If I don't do a good job, I'll humiliate myself. I will embarrass my company. I won't create the kind of interest in what we do that I had hoped to. And then there's all sorts of fallout that people can imagine from those consequences, right? Mm-hmm. And human beings, as a rule, are very good at imagining and blowing up potential negative consequences. So again, the same three conditions exist in the moment that you're on stage ready to speak as they do when you're about to be attacked by a bear. And because your mind perceives those three conditions, it automatically initiates that fight or flight response. So all the symptoms that you feel that we interpret as speaking anxiety, the butterflies in the stomach, the sweaty palms, and inability to remember your own name, the shaking knees, and all the rest, all of that is your body preparing you for what it thinks is a need to extract yourself from a life-threatening situation.
Wow. Wow, that's a lot going on, a lot happening that you have very little control over. So the key is to have some kind of a method to overcome that, and how can our listeners quickly, easily reduce that fear of speaking? How can they enjoy themselves on stage, I guess?
Well, you know, and that's really the goal. I think especially for the 50-plus group, the expectations are higher. When you're in that age category, you're expected to be a leader in your field. And leadership inevitably involves talking to a large group and informing them, motivating, entertaining them. Whether it's a company meeting or a press interview, you're giving a seminar, a sales pitch, you're running a special event, even if it's something in your personal life, like being a team leader or a coach or representing a nonprofit group, you're expected by this age to be able to stand up and talk and do a reasonably good job at it, whereas if you were in your 20s or early 30s, that might not be the case. So I think it's especially important for this age group. So, and I'm glad that you said that you want to reduce speaking anxiety rather than eliminate it. A lot of people have the goal of saying, oh, you know, this just plagues me. At the moment where I need full control of my body and my mind, everything seems to react against me. So the goal here is to recognize, first of all, that it is what it is, that the reaction that you're having isn't just your body playing with you at the moment when you really need it to work with you, that there's a particular reason that this is an automatic process that your body is initiating because it thinks you're in a life-threatening situation, and that fight or flight, by and large, is good. There may be a time when you're actually in a life-threatening situation, and you'll be awfully glad you have it. So then the challenge is, okay, if it's not something I can get rid of, how do I knock it down to a level where it's tolerable, where it's manageable, and even to some extent where it might be working for me as a motivator to help me prepare, to get me excited, to keep me focused and concentrated on doing a good job, but it's not overwhelming me. And I have some tips on how you can do that.
Great. Okay. So So what you're saying is that you at first you should probably be acknowledging that it's your body's working properly. So that's good.
Yes.
If you were standing there and the bear were there and you didn't have that, you'd basically be bear meat at that point. So you want to
And imagine if there were a bus. Just in a modern example, imagine if you were standing in the middle of Park Avenue in New York and there was a city bus coming at you. You don't want to be standing there not reacting. You don't want your brain to be saying, "Huh, that's a bus. I wonder what type of bus that is. I wonder where it was manufactured. I wonder how many people are on the bus." You don't want to be analyzing the bus. You want your brain to force you to act now and think later. And so the fight or flight response really can be a lifesaver, and it's something you definitely want to hang on to. The trick is, how can you remind your body and your mind that this is not a life-threatening situation? How can you mitigate the symptoms so that they don't overwhelm you and prevent you from even attempting to get up on stage and give that presentation? And that's really the trick. So I have a few tips that will fit in sort of in sequence. First is during the preparation period, and this is usually anywhere between maybe 2 days to 2 months before the presentation comes up. And this is during the period before you're speaking, but you already know that you're going to be speaking, and every time you think about it, you feel those butterflies starting, and you feel yourself shaking, you feel the adrenaline pumping. And this is not the reaction you want to have. People interpret this as dreading the speaking engagement. So a couple of tricks here. First is just cognitively to remember who it's about. And my feeling on this is that presentations are not about the presenter. This is a little counterintuitive because the presenter is the one on stage and they're the one with the microphone and the spotlight and it's their slides on the screen, so you think that it's all about the speaker. But my feeling is it's really not. The presentation is all about the audience. The audience, the members of the audience, they're the ones who came to hear the presentation. They're the ones who want to absorb the knowledge. They're the ones who made your presentation a priority in their lives for that time. They're the ones who will suffer if they don't receive the knowledge that they're expecting. So if you can shift your focus mentally from thinking about all the things that might go wrong and about all the symptoms and shift your focus away from yourself and toward your audience and start thinking, hey, what do they need from me to do a good job? What do they need from me in order to have an experience that's informative and enjoyable so that they walk away satisfied? Am I delivering the information the right way? Is there another slide I could use? Is there a joke I could insert? Is there a moment of audience interaction I could create? Am I delivering the best experience for them? And as you shift your focus mentally away from yourself and onto your audience and start evaluating and trying to improve your presentation, your symptoms will usually calm down. So that's one thing you can do.
Okay. So that's in the preparation phase so that you're going to feel more confident. I guess we're going to get to that about when you're actually on stage, that you're presenting, you're loving your audience. You're giving them information that they want instead of just focusing on your own fears and your own message, right?
Right. And just to remember, hey, you know what? I know I'm the speaker, but it's not about me. The audience didn't come to this presentation to bask in my wonderfulness. They're here for the information. They don't really care about me as much as they care about what I have to say. So if
Great
I can
tip.
Focus on that message and deliver something they find valuable, they don't really care if my voice is shaking. And, they don't notice if my knees are knocking together.
Great. Great tip. Okay, what else you got?
All right, so the next one that you can also do that's more more emotional, I suppose, is to try to visualize success. A lot of times when people think about speaking, they get nervous, and it propels them toward a negative imagination of what may happen. They think, oh, God, I'm going to stand up on stage, and I'll forget my name, and I won't know what to say about this slide, and then my pants will fall down, and the stage will get set on fire, and the building will explode, and that's all anybody will remember. And we have a natural tendency to take things to their worst negative extreme. And one of the ways to counteract that is to start a process of visualizing positive outcomes. So I'll give you an example. Let's say that the presentation is 2 weeks away. Every day, just once a day for 5 minutes, leading up to that presentation, sit somewhere quiet, the edge of your bed or a couch or a chair. You can even do this in your car. And just spend 5 minutes trying to put yourself mentally into that presentation and in as much detail as you can muster up. And then imagine a series of positive outcomes. Imagine yourself saying exactly what you want to say the right way that you want to say it. Imagine, you know, see the faces of your audience members as they listen to you and see them smiling and see the eye contact and see them attentive, see them raising their hands. Feel what it feels like to deliver the information exactly as you want it to sound. Hear the applause as you finish. Feel the handshakes as people come up to you afterwards and thank you for sharing the information with them, and they tell you what it means to them. You may even visualize people handing you business cards and saying, hey, I want to talk to you about an opportunity, because they're so impressed with you that they see a role for you in their world. And if you do this consistently, when you start to think about the presentation coming up and those offhand moments, you'll start to replace the negative possibilities with these positive visualizations. And then when you speak, you're more likely to make them come true.
You know, what's fascinating about that is I've heard numerous times that, you know, we operate from different parts of the brain depending on our thought process. And the original brain, the fight or flight brain, can't engage itself if we've got the thought brain, the thought and love and, you know, the prefrontal cortex is engaged. It takes away the emphasis on the fight or flight brain. Is that where this is all coming from? Is engaging a different part of the brain?
Yeah, it really is. It's the animal reptile part of your brain that's saying, oh my God, we're in a life-threatening situation. We've got to escape by any means necessary, and is turning off. It's actually dampening the prefrontal cortex, which is the part of your brain that's responsible for everything that makes you you. It's reasoning and emotions and memory and analysis. And these are the resources that you really want to call on when you speak. So this is a way of counteracting that and letting those parts of the brain take over again. And actually, you brought up an important thing, and this is the next suggestion that I wanted to offer. It's an exercise that you can do when you're within 1 hour of the presentation itself, and it's called expressive writing. And this is a tool that's being used more and more when people prepare for any stressful situation, like taking a standardized test, anything where there's a real strong fear of failure. And the idea here is that you've got this part of your brain that's just screaming at you, that all of these negative messages, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do, did I fix that slide cue, and did I remember my notes, and what if my microphone doesn't work, and, you know, it's just taking every possible anxiety-producing scenario that it can conjure up and just throwing them at you one after another. And you want to calm down that part of your brain before you speak to allow the more relaxed, logical, progressive, and optimistic part of your brain to take over. And one way to do that is through this expressive writing exercise. And the idea is that within about 1 hour of your presentation, that again, you find yourself a quiet spot. It could really be anywhere. It could be in your car. It could be in a stairwell in the building where you're presenting. It could be in a closed office. And you spend about 15 minutes writing about half a page to maybe one page worth of your thoughts on paper. And the idea here is to take all those anxieties that are crowding out your ability to think clearly and offload them onto the paper so that those anxieties feel heard and addressed and they don't bother you anymore. So you might sit in a stairwell, you know, again, just with a single piece of paper, and just spend 10 minutes writing, I'm really nervous that I'll forget what I wanted to say, and I'm really nervous that somebody will ask me a question that I won't know how to answer, and I have to present on stage with this person, but I'm not sure if we'll really sync together well. Whatever your specific fears are, you write out those fears on the page. No one else is going to see it but you, so you can be as specific and as you need to in order to get them out. And then once you've done that, people report that when they go through this process, once they've offloaded those fears, when they finish the exercise, they're calmer, they're more focused, and those voices in their head that are just pounding anxieties at them tend to diminish quite a bit. And as a result, they perform that task better, whether it's, again, taking a standardized test or giving a presentation. Their concentration is much improved after that offloading process.
Those are spectacular tips. That's a great, I can just picture that for next speaking engagement for myself. So remember who it's about, visualize your success, and then write out your thoughts so that you can really download those thoughts. And then probably when you look at them on paper, you realize they're not that big of a deal after all.
Yeah, and I've got a, if we have time, I've got a couple of quick ones for when you actually take the stage and start speaking.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So the idea here is that usually when you take the stage, you have all this speaking anxiety, it will dissipate in the first few minutes as your brain realizes that you are not, in fact, in a life-threatening situation, and then you feel okay. So the question is, how do you deal with the first 5 minutes? How do you just get through that to allow your body to calm down? I have a couple of quick suggestions here. First, if possible, stand up and be standing before you are called onto the stage. The reason is that at the moment that you stand in any situation, you are momentarily lightheaded as your body shifts from a sitting to a standing pose. And if you add in speaking anxiety to that, it can actually overwhelm you momentarily and make you feel faint. So you want to go through that standing process at least 30 to 60 seconds before you have to walk on stage and talk to people, rather than allowing it to happen all at once, or it'll just compound your speaking anxiety. Another thing, and this is always frustrating, I think, when people hear it, but it really does work, is when you get on stage, the first thing you do is smile. It sounds simplistic, but I'm telling you, it's a great way to change your mood from the outside in. It's also a signal to the audience that you're comfortable, that you're confident, that you're excited about being on stage, and what you'll see is they, in turn, will relax and smile back at you, and then you're creating a positive feedback loop where you see them smile, and they reinforce your own confidence, and you relax even more as a result. So smiling is just a really simple way to just de-stress a little bit more, connect with the audience, let yourself and let them know that you're there to have a good time. And then the last thing is I want to encourage people to start off a presentation by asking questions, if possible. And I think part of the reason that anxiety comes around is people feel like they have to shoulder the entire speaking burden themselves. They say, well, the moment I get on stage, I just have to start talking, and I can't stop for my entire 45-minute slot, and everything that's going to be said, I have to be the one to say it. So I feel the whole burden of the presentation. And that can compound the anxiety. Instead, come up with a couple of questions, just really simple, easy show of hands questions that you can ask when you step on stage. You know, you can ask people show of hands, you know, who's been to this show before, or show of hands, how many people had to take a plane to get here if you're speaking at an industry conference, or show of hands, you know, who went to that session last night, the keynote session. It really doesn't matter what you ask. And the key, though, is that you're engaging the audience directly. You're showing them that you care about what they have to say as much as what you have to say. And you're also just giving yourself a few, these little blocks of 3 to 4 seconds each while your audience is reacting to you, where you can breathe a little bit, focus a little bit, concentrate a little bit, and think carefully about the next thing you want to say. So you're giving yourself these little bubbles of time so that you can relax into your presentation instead of feeling like right off the bat it's your job to say everything. That really helps too.
Great information and so much, so many valuable tips for our listeners. Andy, how do our listeners find out more about you and learn more about how you can help them?
Well, we are always available to talk, and I just love talking about this stuff, as I'm sure you can guess. So I'm happy to chat and just give out advice informally to anyone who has a presentation coming up and is struggling with platform skills or speaking anxiety, or maybe you have a slide you don't quite like, or you have a story but it's not quite shaped to maximum effect. So you can always call or email me. The best way to find out more about what we do is to go to the website, which is sparkpresentations.com, and you'll see services that range from emceeing and auctioneering special events to trade show presentations and training trade show staff to be better at giving presentations in your booth, and also training along the lines that I've described, training and coaching for people and for sales teams who want to get better at presenting to clients. I also have a book that I released last year called The Presentation Playbook, which is the first in a series of three about looking at presentations and planning for them almost the same way that a coach or a player would prepare for a game and then call certain plays in the game depending on the situation at hand. So it's a really light, fun read, and I'm hoping that it reduces people's anxiety about speaking and gives them a structure they can work with. And I have a special offer for your audience along those lines if you're interested.
Yes, of course.
Okay. Well, it's really simple and easy to remember. All you have to do is, if you'd like to call or email me to discuss any Spark service, I will send you a copy of the presentation playbook, a print copy, autographed if you'd like, with my compliments. I send it 2 days, so you'll get it nice and fast, and it'll give you more of a sense of more in-depth of how we think here and how we operate and some of the benefits that we can provide.
Oh, that's a great offer for our listeners, and I hope they'll take advantage of it. Andy, it's fantastic information, and I think we could go deeper on the earlier topic we talked about in the interview at another time, if you'd like, which is how to help people really model their presentations towards their audiences and their messaging. So I hope we can get on the air again in the near future and talk more about that, because I really enjoyed the information you shared with us today.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to.
Well, let's book a time and get back on the air again. But in the meanwhile, I wish you well, and thank you very much for joining us today, and I look forward to the next time we talk.
Thank you, Bill. It's been my pleasure. I appreciate it.
We're going to take a short break, and we're going to be right back after this, so please stay with us. Does thinking about what will happen to your business if you're gone keep you awake at night? Will you get the price you need from your business to carry you through retirement? The BEI Network of Exit Planning Professionals is the world's leading advisor network with the power to help business owners transition out of business on their own timeline and terms. Ask your most trusted advisor to create a BEI plan for you or visit us at exitplanning.com. That's exitplanning.com.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.